And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello. Today is Wednesday, February 15th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Darren. I'm here with Kevin. Please listen to us anywhere you get your podcasts. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook. Send us posts. We need people to send us some questions. Come on, guys. We know you're out there. We know you're listening. Tonight, we're going all around the world of sports. We're going to mix it up. We got some NHL, some NCAA basketball, some Major League Baseball stuff, some NBA. We'll get it started with some NBA. When we left last Wednesday, it was before the trade deadline. Kyrie was already shipped off to Dallas, and we were wondering if that was going to be the biggest move we saw with these teams for these trades. The Nets then hit us with a blockbuster and shipped Kevin Durant to Phoenix. They sent him to Phoenix for Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, 4 first-round picks and a pick swap. They turned everything a little upside down. I think between those two trades, they really shifted the East from being a good conference. The West now is looking like it's starting to get loaded up. Kev, what do you think of that trade?
Wow. What a blockbuster. The end of the Big Three experiment for the Brooklyn Nets.
Disaster experiment.
Very disastrous. They only played about 12 or 13 games together, unfortunately, between injuries and Kyrie missing a bunch of time last year with the vaccination. It would have been fun to see him try to work it together. That being said, given that Durant wanted out, this was the second time he asked for a trade within 8 months. He asked for it, you know, over the summer. I think the Nets got a very good package for Durant. Getting Bridges and Johnson, two young wing players who have both had success here in the NBA. Phoenix, from the sounds of it, really, really didn't want to give up Bridges. So I think that's a positive, getting those players back. Jay Crowder, they flipped for 2 more second-round picks, which are always important for completing these trades because every second-round pick gets traded. I'm convinced of that.
Absolutely.
It must be in the collective bargaining agreement that they must be traded. The 4 first-round picks, they're picks this year, 25, 27, and 29. NBA, you cannot trade first-round picks back-to-back years. That's a Ted Septien rule from back in the 80s with the Cavaliers. And the pick swap is in 2028. They've done a good job of replenishing the picks they had to give up for Harden. They still owe Houston their 24 and 26 picks, plus Houston still has swap rights for 25 and 27. So there are a couple of years there where the Nets will have 2 first-rounders a year. A couple of years they'll have none. Their hope is by the time you hit 27 and 29, when KD's done with Phoenix, maybe retired, you know, getting up there in age, maybe Phoenix is not as strong, they're hoping for future value with those picks. Overall, the Nets will remain a competitive team. They are still definitely a playoff team with the roster they have right now. Very similar to the Knicks, they lack that superstar, or what you really need nowadays is 2 superstars to really compete for a championship. So they are at that next level. They will be a tough first round out. If they get the right matchup, they can win the first round. But I think that's their ceiling, much like the Knicks. Same type of teams now. Darren, any thoughts?
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing about it is that, like you said, they got the 4 first-round picks, so they have the opportunity to try to regroup. Durant said he did not want to be part of the rebuild. So once he says that, you know, you do the best you can. He wanted to go to Phoenix, so that was they actually sent him exactly where they wanted to. He's across, you know, the country. He's in another conference. No effect, not like Harden, where you have to see him several times a year. Durant and Kyrie are both on the other side. You know, I thought the Nets did about as good as you could do. What they've done is they've stacked a lot of wing players. They've taken a lot between the two trades. The big moves they make outside of Dinwiddie, who's an older point guard, was they got a bunch of wings, and they already had a few wings. So now, they'll get, you know, rid of Joe Harris and a few other things.
Yes, and 7 picks.
Oh, they got a ton of picks. you know, listen, the Nets aren't gonna go anywhere this year. They'll be lucky because they'll probably fall into a 7 or an 8 seed, or maybe a 6 if they're lucky, which means you're playing one of the top three. Probably not good enough to beat Philly. Probably not good enough to beat Boston. Probably not good enough to beat Milwaukee. They'll need a lot of help in those type series. If they happen by the grace of God getting to the 4-5 series, yeah, they could beat Cleveland. You know, that's really where it stands out there. But Cleveland will have the best player on the court. For the first time in 4 years, you'll look at the Nets, and they won't have the best player on the court on most given nights. That's one thing that's a little different. Whether it be Kyrie in your eyes or Durant in your eyes, most nights they had the best player. That will not happen. But you know what? The team became not fun to watch. They weren't a likable group. Durant was not a likable Net. Nor was Kyrie, nor was Harden. So maybe you get guys with the right attitude, and maybe it becomes a little bit more fun to watch some games. Don't get me wrong. Attendance is going to plummet in Brooklyn. I mean, you know, people want to see the superstars, and I get it. But it's just another example of the me league. I don't want to play here, and I don't want to, and it's not about contracts. The Nets were willing to pay all these guys much as they want. It has nothing to do with money. These guys are just a bunch of selfish babies that want to play with their friends. That's all it is. Drives me crazy in this league. But, you know, and also losing Warren. Warren could have been like one of those guys that was a focal point on the offense, but he went in the Durant trade as well. So I guess they had to throw him in if they were going to get both Bridges and Cam Johnson back. Overall, you know, Nets did what they could. And Phoenix, to me, and we'll talk about it as we go on, on paper, they're the team to beat in the West right now. When you have Chris Paul, you have DeAndre Ayton, you have Booker, and you have Durant. That is, there's only one basketball. I mean, so, you know, they all can't shoot it at the same time. But if they can figure out how to mesh together, the talent on that team is ridiculous. Jake?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think Phoenix is probably the team to beat if they're all healthy. And I think that's the big key right now. And you're going to – if you're Phoenix, you're banking on the fact that Durant's starting to come back after the All-Star break coming up this weekend. You're going to bank on the fact that Chris Paul is going to remain healthy and in good shape for the rest of the year. You probably will. How many more years you get out of Chris Paul? It's a crapshoot, but okay, fine. You know, you got Booker. You're going to have Durant on the court. You got Ayton, and you're gonna play and see what it brings you. So, Darren?
Yeah, just on a note, Bridges has 41 tonight so far with 5 to play. I'm just saying, so they might be unleashing something. They're up 10 against Miami, which is a good team fighting for the playoffs. Yep. Not a great team, but still Jimmy Butler. It's still Miami. He's got 41 with 5 to play. So I don't know if this loosens him up. You don't know if one of these guys becomes a star. You don't know. I mean, and Bridges is really the most likely candidate to do that just because he's been kind of having to share the ball a lot more. Cam Johnson's a bigger guy. I don't know if he's going to be lighting it up like that much, but he's going to be a solid player. Kev?
The one thing this trade, and they weren't that big to begin with. At least Durant gave him a little bit more size. Yeah. Except for Nick Claxton, who goes 6'11", but he's only 215. The only other guy who's bigger than 6'9 is Ben Simmons, and he's not a center. He's not down low. They have nothing inside.
He's a point guard.
I mean, you look at the team, you know, right now, since they made the trade, I mean, it's funny, 4 of the 5 starters are newly acquired. They've been starting. Claxton's a holdover, Finney Smith, Johnson, Bridges, and Dinwiddie. Four new guys. The bench, they've been playing basically O'Neal, Harris, Simmons, and Thomas off the bench. You know, Thomas had that little stretch there when they traded Kyrie. I think, given the team that they are right now, I think Dinwiddie should be the starter.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think Cam Thomas is perfect as a second point guard. And they fit in Watanabe, Mills, and Sharp as needed. But you know,
O'Neal plays a little bit bigger, though, by the way, as well. I mean, I know he's not with height, but he plays bigger.
Yeah, he's listed as 6'9".
But I agree with you, though, on the lack of size. Claxton also is getting 14, 15 rebounds in a lot of nights, and he blocks shots.
He is.
Yep. They're not big, but this is not a league where they pound it inside unless you're playing Jokic. It's just not – oh, and I'm sorry, and Philly and Embiid. I don't want to take it away because that could be the first-round matchup, but it's just – you know what I mean? Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, no. I mean, it's just an interesting. It's a good point, though. Yep. G.
I think before last week, if you told us the Nets are going to ship out Kyrie, they're going to ship out Durant, they're going to wind up with three young players, plus Dinwiddie, plus 7 picks, and then another 2 that they brought in the other trade, plus a couple of pick swaps, I think everybody would have signed on the dotted line for it, because between Kyrie and Durant, it's been a disaster from day one. Between everything that's gone on, between Kyrie just being a mess, Durant being injured. Remember, when he first signed here, he didn't even play the first year.
Yep.
He was still recovering. So I think overall, if you had to tell us that this was going to be the package they were going to get back for both of these players, I think they did pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, you make a great point, G, because, you know, the Nets went out of their way for Durant, didn't play for a year. He has to get traded twice. They demanded Nash be their coach when Atkinson was doing a fine job with less talent before that. Then they stood by Kyrie through a couple of different things. He demanded to be traded. It's the Me League. That's it. Yep. It's the freaking Me League.
All right, let's go across town. Let's talk a little Knick action.
Yeah, so it's interesting. The Knicks made the trade last week for Josh Hart. I forget if we talked about it Friday night. I couldn't remember which day.
Just very little.
So the details were, the Knicks got Josh Hart. They traded Cam Reddish, 2 other players, and a lottery-protected 2023 first-rounder. I remember talking last week. Doesn't make sense. You traded a first-rounder for Cam Reddish, and then you included a first-rounder to get rid of him. Josh Hart has come in. He's done a real nice job. What I found interesting is that so far in the first couple of games here, since he's been part of the lineup, is that he's coming off the bench. They've stuck with their starting 5. They stuck with Randall. Sims has been starting for Robinson, who's out injured.
Yep.
Brunson, who's playing lights out.
Out of his mind.
Three 40-point games this year.
Yeah, he's been one of the best free agent signings I remember the Knicks have in years.
I think he had 40 again tonight.
And Barrett Grimes. Tibbs is going to play his 9-man rotation. He's not going to go any deeper than that. Right now, he's got Toppin, Hartenstein, Hart, and Quickly off the bench. I said it before, very much like the Nets. Good lineup, fairly deep with good quality NBA players, but no superstar. Just like the Nets, their ceiling is probably the 5th seed. They're not getting up to Cleveland. They're not going to get to the 4th seed. The question is, who gets that 5th seed? Who can play Cleveland? Who seems the most beatable of the top 4 in that first round?
Aaron, Gino? I mean, my only question about Brunson and Barrett, more so than the others, is can they become those stars as time goes on? I mean, Brunson, to me, I mean, you think of him as very good. You know, you don't think of him as elite, but he started. I mean, he went up against Trae Young tonight, and he seemed to answer the bell pretty well, in my opinion. I don't know. He had another big night. RJ Barrett's a very talented player. You know, maybe these guys take a leap as we go into the next year. I don't think they'll – they need to get playoffs. They need not to get swept in the first round. They need to, even if they don't advance, they need to be in a competitive series. That's the goal for this year, if you're a Knicks fan, to me. I mean, they didn't do anything of any note last year. You need to find a way to be competitive in the first round series. Even if you're going up against Boston or Milwaukee, you need to find a way to win one and just show that you can beat these guys a little bit here and there.
It's going to be interesting when you look at that Eastern Conference. Right now, Boston and Milwaukee have that. They're up about 3 games. They're battling for first overall.
Yep.
3 games back to Philly and Cleveland in the 3-4. They're playing tonight. Philly has about a double-digit lead with a few minutes left. Then it's another 3 or 4 back to the threesome. I think you put them all together, Brooklyn, Miami, and the Knicks.
Yep.
Those 3 are battling for the 5 and 6.
Yep.
First goal is to get to the five so that you play Cleveland, who should be a little easier to deal with than one of the other three in that first round. Your second goal is to at least be in the six so that you're not playing the play-in. The unfortunate team, the one who finishes behind the other two, is going to be in that seventh. It's going to be in that playoff game. And then your season comes down to one game. Because from the Knicks, it's another three games back to Atlanta, who they're beaten by about 20 already tonight with a minute left. Toronto, Washington, they didn't make any big trades. They're not going to go anywhere. They're not going to get up, I don't think, into the top six.
You know, Pirtle isn't a bad pickup for Toronto. I know he's not great, but he's pretty damn good. It wasn't a bad pick. And they gave up a first rounder and two, Kevin Birch, a first rounder and two number twos for him. Pirtle can play. I just don't know if he's a difference maker for this season.
Right. So it's gonna be an interesting finish to the season here, having both the Nets and Knicks be in the playoff hunt and at the very least be in the play-in games. Hopefully they both can avoid the play-in games and get to the 5 and 6 and get right into the meat of the playoffs.
Just a final note on the Nets, not to belabor it. Mikal Bridges tonight, 45 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 17 of 24 from the floor. So 45 on 24 shots. Efficiency was amazing. 4 for 6 from 3, 7 for 7 from the line. Did it all in 36 minutes, by the way. Had 2 steals, 2 blocks. Did have 3 turnovers. But and they won by 11. The Nets had been struggling a little bit. They've been losing a lot of close games. It was nice to see them get off the snide. I just thought the efficiency was something to note on this team tonight. And they certainly that's certainly about as efficient as you can do, 45 points, in my opinion.
Yep. And Johnson chipped in with 16, with 18.
Yep, 18, 1, and 3.
Thomas off the bench with 19.
He's like Vinny Johnson. He could be a microwave type player.
Gene? Yeah.
And going back to the Knicks for a sec, you got to think that with all their picks, with all their young players, that they're probably in position for potentially the next big star that wants out of somewhere. You know, whoever it may be, and they see guys like Brunson playing well, leading the team, it's got to be a plus that they're in this position at this point. You know, honestly, when we went through the last offseason, I would have loved to have seen Mitchell come here, but that's come and gone, so we'll deal with it. But we'll see if the next big guy who wants to leave somewhere decides, hey, New York's a pretty good option, trade me there. And that's when all those picks come into play. The Nets building all these picks up, they could be in a similar position, probably not this offseason, but you can see it coming with all their picks. They could be in the same position also as we get, you know, into the offseason. So,
pro basketball in this region is going to be fun. No one's winning a title anytime soon, but the team should be competitive, and they're young. That's the one thing. Outside of Dinwiddie, the Nets are young. Joe Harris, you know, you want to throw him in there. And for the Knicks, it's a young squad. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward.
Even Julius Randle feels like he's been in the league forever. He's only late 20s.
Yeah, I think 28, I think, if I'm not mistaken. 27,
28, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, these teams will be around for a while. Knicks win by 21. Nets win by 11.
All right, Dev, you want to give us your top five?
Yeah, real quick, though, I just want to touch on the Western Conference real quick. Looking at their standings, and I'm just bringing this up. All-Star break is this weekend, so I thought it'd be interesting to see how we're stacking up going into the All-Star break. In the West, Denver has clearly separated themselves. As of right now, they've got a 5-game lead on Memphis, who was sitting there at 2. Then it drops back another 2.5 back. From 3 to 13, they were separated going into tonight by 6.5 games.
Wow. There's
11 teams. So anything can happen. Phoenix is sitting here right now in 4th place, 8.5 back of Denver, with only about in that 30-ish game range left. There's not enough time to catch Denver. Denver's too talented to be caught. Phoenix could very easily get up. They're only 3.5 back of Memphis. Very easily can get up past Memphis and get to that 2 seed.
But imagine this, Kev. Imagine this. Imagine Phoenix and Dallas stay where they are and they play a first round series. Right there in a 4-5. And the winner gets the luck of playing Denver in a semi.
Yeah.
Listen, it's not going to happen because both teams are going to pass Sacramento and Memphis. I'm just saying, in the heart of hearts and the wish of wishes, how cool would that be?
Yeah.
See, Kyrie,
that would be fun to watch.
Kyrie gets Durant.
A must-watch first round.
It'll be interesting. Like I said, I think Phoenix gets up to 2. If Dallas gets up to 3, that's a second round matchup.
It is. It certainly is.
So that would be.
I mean, listen, don't count Memphis out yet. I don't think Sac hangs on, but Memphis still has Ja Morant, so they have a superstar.
So my top 5, I was wrestling Bucks Celtics. They play Tuesday night. I thought that was going to be a barometer game, you know, really figure things out. I think he said a lot more about the Celtics. The Bucks won in overtime, but the Celtics were playing without Tatum, without Brown, without Horford, without Smart. It took 40-something from Drew Holiday. It took 30-plus from Giannis to beat the Boston Celtics backups in overtime. That being said, given the fact that the Bucks have won 11 in a row now, I put them at number 1. I have the Celtics at number 2. 3, I go out west. I'll put Denver at 3. Philly's playing real well now. They're at 4. And going into tonight, Cleveland hadn't won 7 in a row. Phoenix still has to prove that they can mesh well together with the Durant trade, so I don't put them up there yet. Power rankings as of right this minute, I've got Cleveland at 5.
Wow, I have the same 5. I have Boston 1. I have Denver still at 2, Milwaukee 3, Philly 4, and Cleveland 5. I have the same ones. And coming up, Dallas, I have them at the 8 right now. Phoenix, I can't get them I can't get them past 8. I need to see them play a little bit. We need to see Durant play a little bit before I can start moving them up.
Yep.
I don't even care how he blends with them, but let me see him play 4 or 5 games before I start moving them up and say, oh, they have a good shot, you know, but they have a chance. Darren.
I have the same exact 5 in the same exact order as Kevin.
Yeah.
But I had Memphis 6, and I did put Phoenix 7. I put Phoenix ahead of Dallas only because I think on paper, Dallas is still a 2-man squad. There's not a lot behind it. There's a great 2 with Doncic and Irving. They both like to control the ball. I'm excited to see how those two are going to distribute and play together. That's the one thing I'm curious about. You know, that's the one thing I'll say. But you know, and Memphis, I think Ja will and get that team to rebound. That's my take on the NBA.
All right, let's talk a little NHL. Kev, you want to start us?
Sure. One of the things that just came out today. Could be big implications for the Eastern Conference wildcard race. Alexander Ovechkin left the team. His father unfortunately passed away today. He had to go home to Moscow, which I think presents a whole other issue with travel and everything else with all the situation going on with Russia and Ukraine. I'm not getting into the politics of that. Way too complicated for our little show here. From a pure hockey perspective, Ovechkin's been incredibly healthy in his career. He's only missed about 40 games in 18 years. But Washington has lost 25 of those games, so they do not play well without Ovechkin. This is a chance for the Islanders and Pittsburgh to try to get a couple of wins here, hopefully take advantage of a couple of losses here by Washington and try to get a little bit into that, a little more solid position in the wild card race. Saturday night, I'm not sure about TV coverage, but I know the Capitals and Hurricanes are playing the next outdoor game down in Raleigh.
Mm-hmm.
Should be interesting with about, you know, 60-degree weather, how the ice holds up. The trade deadline is coming up in just over 2 weeks on March 3rd. Now, last week, we had the locals, at least 2 of the locals, make big trades. Bo Horvat for the Islanders. They play 5 games with Horvat now. He's done a good job. He's got 3 goals, 1 assist in the 5 games. They're +4. The problem for the Islanders is they've lost a couple of games over the weekend where they blew third period leads to teams they should not be losing to. Those are 4 points there that they just choke away. The Rangers
last night as well, by the way.
What?
They blew the Ottawa game last night as well.
And the Ottawa game last night, yep. Now, the Rangers since the trade, they've only played two games since last week. Tarasenko's got one goal in the two games. We'll see how he meshes in going forward. But I thought it was just interesting to see how the two new guys are doing here. And you're looking at the scoring. I was just looking at the scoring race just to see how things were still stacking up. Boy, Connor McDavid still got a big lead. He's first in goals with 42. He's second in assists with 55. First in points with 97. He's 18 ahead of his teammate, Dreisaitl. This is his MVP race to lose, assuming Edmonton. The problem is Edmonton has to get in the playoffs, I think. And they're in a dogfight out west.
Everybody's real close out there.
If
Calgary could get a goaltender, wow, we'd be dangerous. One thing about Calgary, and I know nobody gives a crap, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Third in the league in shots. Third in the league in shots against. They take more shots than almost anybody. They give up the fewest shots in the league almost. And we still don't win games because I have a goalie that can't do crap. That's it. Markstrom had a great year last year. He's been a train wreck. Vladar is my best goalie. He's a backup at best. There is nothing good going on in the wonderful world of Calgary. And yet they're still in the hunt. Edmonton's still in the hunt. The Kings are right there. Vegas coming back to the pack. The Kraken coming back to the pack a little bit. All five of those teams in that division are right there.
Vegas, L.A., Seattle, Edmonton. 1 point each down. 68, 67, 66, 65. Calgary's got 61 right in the middle of the wild card race.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the Central. So really wide open. And like you said, if they can get a goalie at the trade deadline here, Varlamov for one of your speedy guys.
I want Varlamov, man.
You're right.
I got a young kid in the AHL named Dustin Wolf. I'm waiting for him to bring him up.
Darren, you're out on Long Island. Don't you have Lou Lamoriello's number? Can't you give
Balls?
See what you can do?
My God. I would love to give you guys some young talent in exchange for a backup goalie. I would kill for it, and it would help you guys too. It would be exciting.
We could use another winger, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we certainly have enough guys that can shoot the puck. They don't always go in, but we can shoot it. We are an aggressive offensive team. There's just something about this team right now where they just don't seem to have. They were up 3-1 on Ottawa two nights ago with 2 minutes to go. They gave up the lead and went to overtime, and they lost in overtime because Markstrom sucks. That's just kind of what it comes down to. But, yeah, I mean, NHL, Carolina's still playing well. Devil's still playing well. A lot of good teams out there. Kev, I didn't mean to cut you off. Sorry.
No. I think it made all the points I had. Top five? Great.
Yeah, why not? Lead the way, Kev.
All right. So I still stick with Boston number one. They're 2-3-1 the last six, hitting their first real bad stretch here, but they've built up such a lead. They're still up by 11 points over Toronto in their division, so they're still clearly number one. Toss up Carolina. I've got two. They're 8-1-1 in their last 10. I've got the Devils 3-7-1-2 in their last 10, and still the incredible 23-20. Wins, 3 losses, 3 ties on the road. This way I'm not bunching together 20-3.
No, but it's impressive to watch this team on the road, man. I'm telling you.
Then you get down to the 4-5. Boy, this was tough this week. I put Tampa at my 4. They've won 3 in a row. And winners of 5 in a row, I hate to put them up there, but I have the Rangers in the top 5. They've won 5 in a row. They're playing real well right now. I dropped Edmonton out of my top 5. I had them at 5 last week. They've lost 2 of the last 3. That's why I dropped them down to 6. And Toronto's lost 3 of their last 5. So that's why I dropped them out. So Tampa and the Rangers were new in my top 5.
Well, I go the same 1-2-3. Boston 1, Carolina 2, New Jersey 3. I have Toronto at 4, and I have a new 5 also. I knocked Edmonton out of the 5, only I have Colorado at the 5. They're streaking right now. They're looking good. They're playing well. Now, I have the Rangers 6, though. Just for all clarity, I don't have them far behind them. They're playing really well right now. I can see them getting up in those standings. And I have the Islanders coming in at around 10. see what happens with them. They got to stop these bad losses, but we'll see what happens. Darren?
Well, I have Boston 1 like you guys, but I have the Devils 2 and Carolina 3. It's not that the Devils have a better record than Carolina. It's pretty negligible. It's close. Carolina is a little bit better. I just, when I watch the two teams play, I just like the Devils' style a little bit more. I have the Rangers at 4. They've been playing real well, and I kept Edmonton in my top 5. Toronto and Colorado just behind them in Tampa. Those are the 3 right behind them. But
okay,
that's where I sit in the wonderful world of hockey.
All right, let's move along to the NCAA basketball Division I chaos. As you called it a couple of weeks ago, the topsy turvy. I don't know what we're gonna call it right now, but it's a mess. Everybody keeps losing. Darren, talk to us.
It was another topsy turvy week on the college hardwood. It was. So Tennessee loses twice at the buzzer, right? They lose to Vandy on the road and home against Missouri. Then they come back and beat the number one team in the country tonight. But they beat Alabama, right? Tennessee's still really good. Both losses were kind of like flukish. One was almost a half-court shot. The other one off balance from Missouri. The other one was a ball that's kind of deflected, ends up getting to the corner. The Vandy kid hits the three. They're a real good team. They beat Bama. I thought they got a little bit of favorable whistle tonight, but nonetheless, they still win. Purdue, who was the number one, blows a lead at Northwestern. Northwestern's first win ever against the number one school. Now you look at it, Northwestern's up 19 tonight against Indiana. This will be the first time they've ever beaten 4 ranked teams in a row in their history. Looks pretty good at home, up 19. I told you when you did the Big Ten analysis, I said Northwestern is the team to watch. They're really freaking good. They got a point guard, and they can shoot the lights out. But Purdue's still really good, but they blew that lead. St. Mary's loses at Loyola. We made them the team of the week. They blew the game to Loyola, who, by the way, has nothing really going for them except 3 big wins against Gonzaga, St. Mary's, and Wake Forest. So whatever. Xavier falls at Butler. And then tonight they fell again to Marquette. The Marquette's not a bad loss. The Butler loss is a bad loss. So that's brutal.
That was a fun ending that tonight, too.
Oh, it was. It was a great game. Providence loses at St. John's. Wow. Rutgers falls into Illinois, and then they come home and lose at home to Nebraska. They have struggled since the injury to Mawad Mag. Now, listen, Mawad Mag is like their 4th leading scorer. What are you talking about? Andre Hyatt moves up, and he does a nice job filling in. I get it all. But he's an athlete that's a great defensive player that chips in 7-8 points a night, can hit the 3. They haven't been able to replace those minutes. Hyatt takes the starter's minutes and no one behind him, and you see them struggling. And Rutgers shot Nebraska shot the lights out last night, Kev.
Yeah, he's one of those glue guys that just go unnoticed. Don't put up the flashy stats, but boy, when they're missing, you really miss them in the lineup. Oh,
absolutely. Mawad Mag is not someone anyone even knows, but because he's not one of the names they talk about so much. It's always McConnell. And, Amore and Mulcahy, but this is a guy, TCU loses to Baylor. Right now they're down 11 to Iowa State. They have struggled. Now we talked about Mike Miles being out. They also don't have Lampkin. So they're missing their 1 and their 5, and it really has affected them. Now Lampkin's not a shot blocker big guy, but he's a big guy. He's heavy. He takes up a lot of space in the paint. He's a great passer. And he's a good rebounder. So, I mean, it's a tough loss for them. K-State loses at the 2 easiest places to play, but there's no easy place to play in the Big 12. They lost at Texas Tech and at Oklahoma. UConn loses at Creighton. Not a bad loss, but they still lost. Iowa State loses twice. They lose at West Virginia, then home versus Oklahoma State. So all this craziness, right? And then you go – that's just the top 25. You go to the bubble teams. Kentucky loses at Georgia. Michigan loses at home to Indiana, and then they lose at Wisconsin. Clemson loses at North Carolina. Utah State loses at home to San Diego State and at San Jose State, which is a bad loss. Not brutal. They're better than they were, but still not great. Oklahoma State, they had actually a really good week. They did lose to Kansas, but that would have been like a resume builder more than like a bad loss. But they beat Texas Tech and Iowa State, so they did good things. New Mexico loses at Air Force in Wyoming. At Air Force home against Wyoming. That's a quad 3 loss. Seton Hall loses at Villanova. Who'd have thought Villanova would be a bad loss? But they are right now. And Florida loses at home to Vandy. He had a couple bubbles that helped themselves. Mississippi State wins at Arkansas. Right now they're down 8 at home against Kentucky. So I don't know if they're going to be able to withstand that. Northwestern, we talked about. North Carolina's win over Clemson. Memphis wins over Temple. They keep their little life alive. So much going on, guys. So much going on.
I don't know if you mentioned it, but the one that killed me was Arizona losing to Stanford.
Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped that. Yes, Arizona loses to Stanford.
Oh.
You know, the Pac-12 was real interesting. Arizona loses to Stanford. You don't expect that at all, to be honest with you. Oregon beats USC. USC is another team that is like, what's going on here? Because they lose to Oregon and Oregon State. Now, the Oregon loss isn't brutal. The Oregon State loss is. Yeah. So it's like now USC, who I thought was firmly in, is really a bubble team. You know, I think Lenardi has him as first team out.
As the thing that is really, really starting to make this interesting is that over the last 3-4 weeks, we've seen so many of these top 10 and top 20 teams lose. This is going to get real interesting as we get into the conference tournament time, as we get into the tournament time, where these teams fall out, because one bad matchup, they could be gone. I mean, I don't. There's no powerhouses. No one's outstanding in this field right now. This is going to be interesting, Darren.
I've never seen it where it's not bad basketball. It's just there's no elite team.
Yeah,
Purdue is not elite. You watch them. They have young guards. Okay, they have. Looks like I'm spinning out of control again for some reason, but it doesn't make any sense. And you look at you know, Alabama, they got blown out in against Gonzaga. They got blown out at Oklahoma, and then they bounce back and they blow everybody out, go back to the one seed. Then they lose a close game to Tennessee. There's no team unbeatable here. There's no team unbeatable.
I think it's interesting. You look at something like the Big 12. You look at the last place team, Texas Tech. And you think last place team, they're not good. Texas Tech is 14-12 despite being 3-10 in the conference. Their three wins, Iowa State, and the last two they won two in a row, Kansas State and Texas.
Texas.
This is especially the Big 12. Anybody can beat anybody in that conference.
No, even Oklahoma blew out Alabama. They're the worst team in the league. They beat Alabama by like almost 30. I mean, you know, this is this is a very, very unpredictable tournament. The brackets are going to be tough to judge. It's going to be about matchups. It's going to be who gets better play from their guards. It's going to be how the officials are calling games. If you're in a league where they let you play more physical and you have refs that are not used to allowing that, you know, there's going to be a lot of those little subtleties that are going to determine first round wins, let alone, you know, late wins, because the difference between 5-12 and 6-11 are going to be minuscule.
Yeah.
And to be honest, the second round difference between 3-6 and 2-7 is also going to be minuscule.
Yeah,
this is a very, very wild, wild season. One of the conferences we wanted to touch on was the Mountain West. So I'm going to pound through that, and then we'll get you guys' thoughts. Mountain West, San Diego State's in, guys. They're just in. Okay, 19-5, 11-2 in conference, 8-5 against Quad One and Quad Two. No bad losses. Net of 18. They hold opponents to 66 points a game. They shoot 46% from the floor, hold their opponents to under 30% from three. It's a great stat. They also average 7 steals a game. They only have two guys that score double figures, Matt Bradley, who's a Cal transfer, and Darian Trammell. Trammell averages 10 points, almost 4 assists, a steal and a half a game. Bradley averages 13 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists a game. But they have a total of 8 guys that average 7 points a game and up, so they do have a lot of balance. But again, it's going to be Matt Bradley that has to score, and if he doesn't do it, they don't have a go-to guy. Boise State should be in. That would be the team I'd say that should be in. 18-6 overall, 9-3 in the league, 7-4 against Quad One and Quad Two. The two bad losses, Charlotte at home and South Dakota State. Charlotte on the road, I'm sorry, and home against South Dakota State. Good wins against Colorado, Washington State, and Texas A&M, who's playing a lot better down the stretch. 24 net, hold opponents to 61 points a game. Have 5 guys who average double figures, led by Tyson Dagenhart, 14.4 a game with 5.5 rebounds, 2 assists. Max Rice averages 13.5, 4.5 rebounds, and a steal a game. and Marcus Shaver 13.4, 6.2, and 4.2 with 1.7 steals also. They also have Agbo averages 11.5, and Najee Smith averages 9.7. I mean, they have a lot of guys, but those that starting five is everything. After that, nobody averages more than 3 points a game. So they have to get everything from their starters. Nevada's right there. They're close. 20-6, 10-3 in conference, 7-6 against quad one and quad two. They have no great non-conference wins, okay? They just don't, but they don't have any bad losses either. Sweep of New Mexico, which looked better earlier than it does right now. And then they beat San Diego State. Net is 31. They shoot 80% from the line. So late in the game, this is a team that likes their chances. 35% from three, but they just don't rebound the ball well. That's the one thing you'll watch for as we get closer to the tournament. They have three double-digit scorers. Jared Lucas leads the way with 17.7 points a game. Kenan Blackshear averages about 15, and Will Baker averages 13. After that, it's a big drop-off. Utah State, probably the most inconsistent of these teams, right? They 20-7, 9-5 in conference, 6-5 against quad one and quad two. Best non-conference win was at Washington State, but they lost to San Jose State. Not that San Jose State is bad. It's just their net is like 100, you know, so it's not a good loss. They have two good games down the stretch against Boise State and Nevada, both at home. They need the windows to get in, I think. They average almost 80 points a game. They shoot 41% from three. They average 17 assists a game. They share the ball well. It's Odom coaching, the guy that led UMBC to the upset over Virginia in the tournament a few years back. You know, their best player is Ashworth. He averages 15 points, three rebounds, 4.5 assists, and he shoots 89% from the line and 47% from three. Thing about him is he didn't start until 10 games in. They had him coming off the bench. Then they realized he's our best player. We might as well start him. New Mexico is the last team I'll discuss. They're on the bubble still, but they were the last undefeated team in the country. They were 14-0. Now they're 19-7, 6-7 in conference. 5-3 versus quad one and quad two. They have wins against St. Mary's, Boise State, and they won at San Diego State. So they're good wins, but they've lost four in a row, including at Air Force and home to Wyoming. Net is 55. They average 81 points a game. They shoot 49% from the floor. They have hit as many free throws as their opponents have attempted, so they get to the line a lot. They have three double-digit scorers, and the lead guy is a name you might know, Jamal Mashburn Jr., who came with Pitino when he left Minnesota, averages almost 20 a game with three rebounds and two assists. Jalen House and Morris Udizi also average double figures. So you go through it. To me, San Diego State's the lock. Boise State and Nevada probably in good shape. The other two, Utah State and New Mexico, are going to have to play their way in. That's my take on the conference. I don't know if you guys have any opinion on that.
Now, that's about what I had, too. I think Utah State's a little bit better position than New Mexico just because New Mexico's been so bad lately. They've lost four in a row here.
Yeah,
UNLV have any chance of getting in?
You know, a couple of bad losses in a row right now. Their net's down in the 80s. I don't really like it right now. They fell off. I mean, they looked like they had a shot. They were playing well in the middle, and then they had a couple of – they had a chance against San Diego State. They were blown out on CBS, on national TV. They've been playing a Mountain West game, like, on Saturday triple headers the last few weeks. And it's not bad basketball. It's good basketball. But, you know, everybody can watch you, and when you get embarrassed against San Diego State, that doesn't bode well for you on the national level. If you're playing a Wednesday night game and it's only on ESPN Plus, you're fine. You know, it's just one of those things.
Yeah, I think the question is going to come down to, I think we're pretty solid on three getting in. The question is that fourth team, do you take the fourth Mountain West or do you take the seventh or maybe eighth from ACC and Big Ten, who I think are a little down this year?
Well, I agree with you on that. I mean, the ACC and Big Ten are both, I wouldn't call the Big Ten,
they're,
I don't know, down. The big names are down. There are some teams that are not the typical names that are playing well. Like Northwestern is not a team you normally expect. Indiana's resurgent. Illinois is down from where they were, but they're pretty good. It's Michigan that's off. Michigan State's off. Ohio State's off. These are three big schools that I think two of them aren't going to make it. Maybe all three.
And those are power conferences.
Is the Big Ten a power conference, Jake? Because I want to make sure about that.
To me, I consider them down because the latest rankings, they've only got two teams in the top 25.
Very true. They just beat each other.
So to me, that makes them down a little bit.
All right,
he is, like I said, compared to what we expect from the Big Ten.
No, I agree with you. It's just that they beat each other up a lot. They really do.
Here's the only thing, Kev, and that is, if we're assuming San Diego State, Boise State, Nevada are going to get in,
yep.
Utah State and New Mexico, they have to play. They have to start really playing well. Otherwise, they're not going to get in. I mean, how many, Darren, what do we got? Another 2 weeks?
These teams have 4 to 5 games left in their conference schedule. That's it. First week of March, it's over.
I agree with you. I think it could be up for some interpretation, but those teams got to turn it on a little bit. Otherwise, they're just – I mean, coming down the stretch for New Mexico to play like this, I had them at one point in. I don't have them in right now.
Yeah.
I mean, they need some good wins to get back on the bubble right now.
I think
they're going to have opportunities, but it's not easy.
What I think also impacts it is some of the other conferences. You know, you take a look at the West Coast. We know it's going to be two. It's going to be St. Mary's Gonzaga. The American. We know Houston's in, obviously. Question is Memphis. They're in the 40s in both the net and the BPI.
I like them, but I know it's not a lock by any stretch. One bad loss, and that's it for them. They have to get to the final of the conference tournament to me.
But the American is one of those conferences you expect two or three teams in there in a year. This might be one team. Mm-hmm. Atlantic 10, they're down this year where they're only going to get their conference champion in.
I mean, I'm going to look it up now, but the Commonwealth was down tonight to Rhode Island in the second half. I don't know. I mean, Rhode Island's not a good team. I'm just saying in general, that's the kind of thing that throws you off in that conference. Fordham, by the way, 21-5, continues to win games. I honestly can't believe it. VCU came back. They beat Rhode Island by 55-54. So they did hold on. Fordham, by the way, up 15 against St. Bonnie's, 21-5. I know they're not getting in, but I hope they can get to at least the final and make people have to think about them. They can get the 25 wins in the A-10. Just a thought.
Yep.
Is there any? I'm sorry, Kev. Is there any other team in the A-10 that has a chance?
VCU is the best team. Dayton is starting to play a little bit better lately. Okay. I don't think anybody's resume is that good.
I mean, unless they win their conference tournament, putting that aside for the moment, but.
And five teams can win this conference tournament, whether it be VCU, Dayton, Fordham, I mean, there are a lot of teams that are up in the air. Even St. Louis can win this conference and Richmond can get hot. So anything can happen, Kev.
Yeah. When you look at the computer numbers, VCU's in the 70s or 80s, depending on which one. Dayton's in the 70s. Their BPI is a little bit better. They're 50 in the BPI, but their net is 78.
They didn't have great wins outside the conference.
Yeah.
It's a real issue. I mean, even Duquesne is playing well in that league. There's a lot. Keith Danbrad, who used to always get Akron into the tournament, he left for Duquesne, which made no sense. It looked like a lateral move to me. But he's done a good job there in his 4 years there.
ESPN, when they do their standings, that's what I look at. And on the last column, they have your record against teams that are ranked. In the entire Atlantic 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, they've only played 8 games or so, the entire Atlantic 10 against ranked teams, and they're 0-8 at the conference. Wow. So there is not a quality win in that conference.
You expect St. Louis, you expect even Davidson, you expect Dayton, and you expect VCU to all be good every year. And we have a year right now where none of them are. It's a totally it's a very lackluster year.
Any closing thoughts on basketball before we move on, guys?
Just for the teams, just yes or no. And I think most of them are gonna be no's, but just wants to keep in mind. Out of the Colonial, Charleston, they're 25-3 right now.
Well, they're tied for first place with Hofstra. That's
close, but probably not for me.
I have him on the bubble. I have him bubble out, though.
And I'll bring these up because assuming they can win out and get to their conference tournaments, these are the teams that are going to be up near 30 wins.
No, I agree with you.
Yep. Go ahead.
Florida Atlantic, 24-2, net of 20.
They're in.
Ranked in the AP.
They're in.
I think they're in.
Regardless. I have them in. For me,
they're like an 8-9 game right now, Kev.
For me, they would have to lose horribly in a first round game in their tournament not to get in at this point.
Summit League, again, the last two I'm going to mention haven't really beaten much, but Summit League, Oral Roberts, another one, 23-4. Gaudy record, 38 net, only a 79 BPI.
They didn't beat anybody. Listen, if they get to that conference final, I think they'll get in.
And again, you're going to be sitting there looking at a 28-5, 29-5 type team.
Absolutely.
They're a no for me.
And the last one out of the Sun Belt, which has been a pretty decent conference.
Actually, there's two teams that are really good in that league.
Southern Miss at 23-4. And the other one was Louisiana.
Also, even Liberty is a good team. Not in that league, but I'm just saying they're another decent team. And the only reason why I give Southern Miss the edge, they beat Liberty, I believe, by two. I think that was the matchup. One of these teams beat Liberty by a deuce. I think it was Southern Miss. I think Southern Miss has a better shot of getting in and at large than Louisiana.
Me too.
I think Southern Miss has to get to the final of their conference tournament and win out the regular season to do so.
I mean, they've got a two-game lead right now.
Yeah, they have to win out. And they can't afford – and you got to remember, they're playing 1 week less of games.
Yep.
So they only have they only have 2 weeks left, not the three. But they have to win their last three games – their last four games that they have scheduled. I think they have four left in order to get there. That will get them to 27. If they get to 29 and lose in the final to a good team, I would put them in there. So they're 23-4 now. That will get them to 27. Two wins get them to 29. 29-5, I put them in.
Yeah.
But it has to be that scenario. It can't be
less exactly.
Than that. Yep. For me, all those teams you mentioned, Florida Atlantic's the only one that, again, unless it's something huge, disastrous how they lose, to me, they're the only one that's probably in at this point. Some of those other teams could, but at this point, I'm not seeing it. I know Darren thinks we got a couple of maybes on that group. So
again, I'm going to put it like this though, G, because we were in AC last year watching all these games and we had a blast. Right, the best first round game or one of the best was when San Francisco played Murray State, that at large from the West Coast Conference, and sometimes that game. I know I'm sorry, but that game was awesome. You know it, and I know it.
It was.
Todd Golden got the job at Florida because of that win, because of that game. But the thing about it was that it is fun to get some of these mid majors a shot in this tournament. And you're saying to yourself, do I want to see Southern Miss get a shot at 29-5, or do I really need to see North Carolina at 17-13, or do I need to see Kentucky? I'm not saying that. These are not normal teams that are bubble teams. You know, we're talking about Michigan State. We're talking about Kentucky. We're talking about North Carolina. These are blue bloods. These teams are never on the bubble, and they are now. Even USC looked like they were a lock a few minutes ago, and now all of a sudden they're falling down the peg a little bit. There's some excellent teams on that bubble. Excellent names, I should say.
I want to see it. I'm the last one. I want to see some of these teams get in, but we see it year after year. If one of those teams makes it, it's a lot.
No, you're right. I mean, Clemson. Is Clemson a team? I know they blew out Florida State tonight, but they've lost to everybody lately. Is this the team that we want to see take out a Southern Miss?
No.
Or a Florida Atlantic? Or, you know, or Charleston? I'd rather see what Charleston can do. And you know what? We also put ourselves at risk of having a horrible, horrible first round blowout when we put one of those teams in. They could get embarrassed. They may not have the size to compete. There's a million things that could go on. But it's still fun when you're looking at it and you're projecting the tournament. That's what's all exciting about it. Kev, I'm glad you brought up those type teams. I think we have to bring up bubble teams every week from here on out to see what we're going with. We know who's going to be in. Now we got to figure out, the teams that are on that bubble and who's going to get those last spots. And a lot of it comes down to conference tournaments.
Yeah, and before we get into the big names of the bubbles, I want to bring up the little guys. They deserve a little mention too.
Oh, of course, of course. Well, that's why this tournament is special. It's like Tin Cup, you know. It's like the unknown guy that plays in the U.S. Open that gets to come in. As stupid as an analogy as it is. But this is one of those tournaments where everybody has a shot because it's one game. It's one time. And, you know, UMBC beats number one Virginia.
Yep.
And, you know, and Valpo beats Ole Miss. And Iowa State loses to the shoe salesman, Gino. and all that other stuff for Coppin State. But that's what makes this tournament special in a lot of ways. You know, so I agree, though. Talking about the little guys makes it more fun.
Okay. Let's move on to a little baseball. Just a couple of notes that came out today, actually. It looks like Montas for the Yankees. Yeah. He's going to be missing most of the season.
What a trade that was.
Yeah, that's really coming back to kill us. And then the other note that I saw today was DeGrom missed his first. He was held out of his first workout because he felt tightness
in his side.
That's
just gave him a lot of money. I don't blame him for sitting him out, but he bet a freaking pitch.
The other thing Kev.
I was going to say, that's why I didn't like the 5 years for him.
I get it.
How is he going to last 5 years?
Well, right now, I think they try to get him to last 5 months. Don't buy 5 years.
They want 5 minutes.
A couple of things with baseball. We're going to obviously get deeper into it as we go in. We want to just take a couple of minutes to talk about some of the rule changes that are going into effect this year. We know we have the pitch clock. We have larger bases. We have the elimination of the shift. A limit on how many times the pitcher can throw to first. The ghost runner is going to be on in extra innings all the time now. And then the one that came out the other day was they're trying to really eliminate a position player being brought in to pitch a game. Kev, give me one of those that you like or don't like. Tell me why.
Hate the shift. Hate banning the shift. So the rule states now all infielders must be either on the infield dirt or the infield grass, and you must start with two fielders on either side of second base. We've had a discussion before. If you hit the ball in the same damn spot every time, your defense should be able to play to defend it. To me, I made the analogy, or think of the analogy, NFL, you're playing a 4-3, team gets down to the goal line. You're allowed to put in your big guys on defense to stop the team from running in there. Why can't you play defense in Major League Baseball? Play defense. If the guy's going to hit it in spot A, put your position player in spot A. Put your fielder there. And make these players adapt. Make them go the other way. Make them learn how to play fundamentals. I hate the rule. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it.
I don't mind it. I think when things are too much to one side, I think sometimes you need a rule to balance it out again. We've seen it throughout the history of all these sports. Something changes, they make the change, and it's basically just to level the playing field again. I think it got to the point where the shift became too much of an advantage to the defensive team. So this levels the playing field.
I disagree with you, Gino. Here's the thing. Has the home run just gotten a little bit boring to me, or is it boring to everybody? I like rallies. I like guys on base. I like pitches flustered. Now with a pitch clock and pitches are flustered, it's a little different, but less moves allowed. I like guys knowing how to hit the ball all over the field. I like guys that know how to – not everybody has to hit a freaking home run. I don't need my number nine hitting 212, but hitting 21 homers. I'd rather hit him 255 and spraying the ball around.
But I would think the elimination of the shift helps you prove that point.
How?
Because they're now able to hit the ball a little bit better to all over the field.
No, they're not. They're going to pull it where they always wanted to. Who's going to start spraying the ball now? There's only two guys on the side of the field.
You are not going to have five defensive players huddled up on the first base side when a left-handed hitter comes up.
The left-hander who pulls the ball every at bat, instead of being able to play your defense over there where he's got to pull the ball every at bat, now you're going to give him a chance to get a base hit. Make him learn how to hit it the other way.
They're not going to hit the ball the other way.
But they have to learn how to do it.
Then they don't deserve to be playing.
So then you have a boring game.
How is it boring?
And you have more guys trying to hit home runs because they can't hit the ball to the outfield.
I don't see. Your analysis makes absolutely no sense to me.
No, I think it makes a lot of sense.
You're telling me right now.
You don't want
all they're doing is hitting homers now.
Over the fence. You want more hits. You want more base runners. So by eliminating the shift, you are going to get more hits. You're going to get more base hits.
But they're not going to be hitting the ball all over the field. They're going to be pulling the ball dead. So
you're going to get more hits.
So these lefties are going to get up there and be able to get six extra ground ball base hits a year. Because now all of a sudden you can't play defense the way you want to.
It's the start of reducing the number of home runs. Darren just said he doesn't like all these home runs.
How does that reduce home runs?
How does that reduce home runs?
You're telling me no one's going to try to hit a homer anymore. They're all going to aim for singles? You got to be kidding me.
No, but
nothing you're saying justifies the home run part. I'll give you the other argument. I'll give you the other argument about the about they're going to get a few more hits. I won't give you that they're going to go for home runs less. They're going to keep trying to pull the ball.
Once a month, that ground ball is going to get through instead of being gobbled up.
No, it's going to be a lot more than that. It's going to be a lot more than that.
I don't like – the one thing I like, honestly, I like the bigger bases. They might steal more bases. It might be – it might show fractions that you're a little faster, a little quicker. That's about it. The rest of it's crap.
I'll tell you the one I like.
Is a joke. The shift is stupid. All right, go ahead.
I like the pitch clock.
I'm okay with the pitch clock. I love the pitch clock. But here's the problem.
Are they
going to enforce it?
They're going to have to.
If Verlander is on the hill in a big spot and he goes over by 3 seconds, they're going to call a ball.
They're going to have to.
Let's see if they do it. I want to see them do it.
When they outlawed the tack, everybody was up in arms for 3 weeks. And then everybody got used to it. And I think the same thing is going to happen with the pitch clock. They're going to have to call it. If you're putting all these things in play, you have to call it. The same way you outlawed the stupid tack.
If they enforce it, I'm good. I just want to see them enforce it.
Well, they're going to have to.
Well, I think that's
what we say.
What's all tied together, you've got the pitch clock. So just so everybody understands, it's 15 seconds to pitch when there's nobody on base. It's 20 seconds to pitch when there's a runner's on base. The batter has to be in the box with at least 8 seconds remaining on the pitch clock. So it avoids you stepping out for half an hour and, you know, doing the no-bar Garcia Parra or Mike Hargrove if we go way back.
Yeah, you're right.
In addition to that, you're also – it's not just pickoffs. It's disengagements from the rubber.
Mm-hmm.
So in a particular at-bat, not only is it that you're limited to no more than two disengagements from the rubber during an at-bat. So that means you can't step off and fake a pickoff. That counts as one. A pickoff is a second. If you're looking and you come set, and all of a sudden you realize, I don't really want to throw that pitch, you're not allowed to step off. You have to throw that pitch.
Yep.
In addition to that, there's also going to be an emphasis on the walk rule, they said.
I heard that.
Last year, there were 122 walks in Major League Baseball, which was the lowest in 50 years since 1973. Guys who this affects, like I said, the combination of the pitch clock and the balk rule, two classic examples. Kenley Jansen.
Yep.
If you remember, you know, you watch him, he comes set and then does his leg kick like two or three times before finally delivering a pitch. What they're going to say is basically, first move, you have to either pick off or go home. No more of this stuff. Another guy, if you remember last year in the playoffs for Houston, Luis Garcia.
That's the guy I was thinking of right away.
From the windup, you're allowed to step either one step back or one step to the side and throw. This way, everybody's clear when your motion starts is when the pitch clock stops. So there's none of this, you know, Garcia, you know, getting the chances start moving back and forth and saying, okay, my pitch clock is done here, but I'm not throwing the ball for another 10 seconds. So I think they're all tied together to try to get these games sped up.
Listen, I'm good with a decent amount of it.
No, you're not.
Well, I'm thinking part of it. Here's my thing. Everything I love about baseball in the playoffs becomes limited with this. The fact that you are waiting for the drama of a pitch in October, I love that drama in between pitches, especially when my team's playing. I think that we're taking away, I think they're trying a little too hard to take a game that's never had a time limit and put a time limit on it. It's been a timeless game. It's just, I don't know. I like the bases. That was it. Everything else I hate. You got me, Gino. You're right. I hate everything with the bases.
And not only that, I'm sorry, Kev, not only do you hate it now, but I guarantee you in the first 2 weeks of the season, when a batter doesn't get out and they call a strike, when he doesn't get in the box and they call a strike and he's out, you're going to scream. And when a pitcher doesn't deliver the pitch in time and they call a ball and it's a walk and it walks in a run, you're going to have a heart attack. I guarantee it.
Only if it's on my team.
Especially late in the game. You know, these relievers are going to come in high pressure late in the game, ninth inning. Edwin Diaz coming in there, and he takes one extra step off or, you know, takes 16 seconds. All of a sudden, he walks in the winning run. That fans are going to go ballistic.
I love it. I can't wait to see some of these games. I want to see the pitch clock. I want to see these guys actually have to play. I don't want them stepping out every 2 seconds. I'm looking forward to this.
That part I like.
I renewed my MLB subscription.
Get in the batter's box. Let's get ready to play. But I still question late in the game these situations that are just going to present themselves and just cause trouble.
Well, we saw it. My only example is we saw this last year with the tax situation, where they said we're banning the tack. And as soon as they said it, I said, that's crap. There's no way they're going to ban it. How are they going to figure this out? It's going to be cause a problem. And you know what? It caused the problem. It caused the problem right from the get-go. But they did it. And I think that's the only way they're going to do this. And honestly, I think baseball has now put too much effort into making sure these rules are carried out for them to go by the wayside. I think this is the year, Darren, that the pitch clock goes into effect. The timer's going to be up there. You're going to see it like in football when you got the 24 seconds. That's what they're going to do. They're going to do it in the ballpark. You're going to see it. And I think that's what's going to happen. And that's going to put so much pressure on these umps to make the correct calls.
I get it. We're going to also see a lot of things like we do in football where the clock hits zero. They're still waiting a second, and they still snap it and get away with it. And it's going to be, is it going to be consistently called or not? That's really my question.
Well, I hope so, but as long as they're at some consistency, I don't want to see 8 seconds pass. You know what I mean?
No, I get it. I mean, listen, I don't have a problem with this, with the speed of the game for the most part. Yes, part of it I do, but yes, a lot of it I don't. I don't mind. Listen, nobody likes a four-hour Yankee-Red Sox game. Nobody wants to see that. I grant you that. But I don't like the pressure on the pitcher to now not throw his best pitch. Or him and the catcher not being on the same page, but they can't do anything. I don't enjoy that. I think that we're taking away the strategy of baseball in the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. I really do. But the beauty of the game is the strategy of it.
But don't you think...
Simplicity is what makes it kind of like what we all can gather with. But the beauty of it is strategically trying to figure out a way to make it work.
But don't you think that pressure is also on the batter? You're saying it from a pitcher's perspective, but it's also from the batter. You know, these.
I get it, but I there are pitchers that have been pitching this league 11, 12 years that have had a very, very direct way that they've handled how they pitch.
And so
now they have to change the exactly way they have to pitch. It's a very different thing. The batters that step out and step in, I think it's an easier adjustment for the hitter than the pitcher.
Okay.
This is my take. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, Kev. I just think it's –
I don't like – I like the idea of trying to get the game, especially the early part of the game especially, you know, the step outs and the step offs and everything else, get the game moving a little bit. But when it comes late in the game, and I know you can't have two different rules for different parts of the game, but late in the game, it's going to really feel like it's a lot of pressure, too much stress on the pitchers and batters to make sure they.
Good. That's what I want. That's what I see. You guys are thinking of it as a negative, and I'm really thinking of it as a positive.
No, okay. It is a negative.
When we get into
I think it's a negative.
when we get into that eighth inning and they make a pitching change and that pitcher comes out, he's got to throw. This is, he can't delay this. It can't be 14 pitches to first base. He can't be doing six other things. They can't be taking 12, 15, 35 seconds between pitches. This is going to be boom. You want it to be the pressure situation. Here it is.
Gee, you're always more progressive than I am on every move in every sport. You just are.
Listen,
I get it. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not saying I disagree. I get it. It's just I have a hard time taking a game that, you know, I kind of am used to. I have a hard time with some of the changes already.
Okay.
And now we have this.
I can understand it, but the one thing I just hope I don't hear from some fans is, oh, they never change the rules, because that's just garbage. They've been changing rules for 100 years, and they'll continue to change rules based on the game. So, you know, they're changing the height of the mound, and they're changing the fences, and they're bringing in the designated hitter. And, you know, we can keep going on and on. So, you know, for me, I want to see these rules because I like the game and I want to see the game be a better product to watch. And hopefully more people will watch it and get more people into it. The one thing I hate is NFL is 47 million people watch it on a Sunday and you get a big baseball playoff game and there's 1.5 million people watching. I hate that. Hopefully that changes. That's what I want. I want these games to actually mean more. NFL playoff games are bigger than World Series games at this point. I want that to change. All right.
I don't disagree with you. I want baseball to be more popular. Kev's got a point.
Kev? I think what's got to be interesting, though, is that with some of these changes, these are not occurring in the World Baseball Classic. So you're going to have a lot of players who are not going to be able to have a full spring training to get used to these rules either. They're gonna have some of their time reduced by 3 weeks. That could have an impact on some of these players.
They've known about this for 3 or 4 months. Come on.
But until you're actually playing in games, you don't really realize it, I don't think.
But these guys haven't – it's not like these pitchers haven't thrown a ball in 4 months like it's 1971. These guys are pitching every day. They're throwing every day. Okay, fine. They're ramping up. But, you know, these guys are not – It's not like these guys are working at Kmart in the off season. They're working on their bodies. They're working on their product.
I'm talking to get used to these new rules.
This isn't Al Bumbry.
Al Bumbry, look at you!
Wow, former Orioles great.
I always fear a little bit of the changes that take a purity of a sport away. I know that they're trying to make it more appealing to younger people. I got to be honest. When I look around, I feel like baseball is somewhat alive and well with Little League. And I think there's more and more kids getting involved. I think it dropped off and now my town is baseball crazy, dude. I got to be honest, more so than any other sport. Seems like I know a lot of kids that are playing again. I think it does have a minor resurgence, but I know it's not as exciting to watch. I get that. It isn't. You got to appreciate this sport to love watching it. It was always slow. It was slow when we were kids. Oh, and it was 2 hours, not 3 hours. And it was still slow. Slower pace than every other sport we watched.
I am sure once the spring training games happen, we will beat this. We will beat these rule changes to a pulp some more. But anything else from you guys? Darren? Kevin?
I know Kev was going to talk a little golf, and I was going to mention a horse racing thing. So you want to go first, Kev?
Sure. So golf, this past weekend, Super Bowl weekend, instead of watching 8 hours of the Super Bowl pregame show, turn on the Waste Management Phoenix Open. Like I said, the 16th hole there, the Coliseum did not disappoint. You had the streaker there on Friday or Saturday. Doing his pole dance on the flex stick, getting chased by the marshals, jumping in the lake on the next hole. I mean,
it's fun stuff.
It's something you don't see in any other tournament. Scottie Scheffler held off Nick Taylor to win by 2, reclaimed the number one ranking in the world from Rory. Big news this week. We finished up the West Coast Swing with the Genesis Invitational. which is a tournament hosted by Tiger Woods. It benefits the Tiger Woods Foundation. The big news is Tiger Woods will be playing. It is his first non-major in over 2 years. Last year, he played in only the three majors, came back, finished 47th in the Masters, withdrew after the third round of the PGA, skipped the U.S. Open, tried to play the Open Championship because it was St. Andrews, missed a cut after two rounds. He was gone. So he played 9 rounds of competitive golf last year. He says his biggest problem right now is his ankle more than anything else. And we'll see how he looks. This is a test for him to see, I think personally for himself, to see how he can hold up looking ahead a month and a half or so to the Masters.
And listen, with all the excitement that's going on overall in golf with Liv and everything else, there's a lot happening this year. It's going to be a crazy year in golf. Should be a fun one, though.
It'll be interesting because last year we did not see the Liv. That's the other breakaway golf organization funded by Saudi Arabia. They have a contract now this year with the CW Network to broadcast their tournaments. So we'll be able, if anybody's interested, they can go and check it out and see how they handle their tournaments as opposed to what the PGA Tour does. They do things differently. They've got individual plus team type of tournament within the tournament, awards and prize funds for winning team. They do shotgun starts to try to shorten the amount of time out there. It'll be interesting to see what the differences are between the LIV and the PGA.
Yeah, I mean, the PGA is trying to loosen up a little bit. It's always been a little stodgy. Now they're doing a lot more with the social media and all that other stuff. It's going to be interesting to see how these two coexist, and they're allowing live players to play in majors. I mean, there will be some crossover, which is pretty cool.
Well, Masters keeps to their tradition. They're going to say any former winner of the Masters is welcome to play, and you've got to summon them over there on the LIV. And the Masters is their own separate thing.
They do whatever they want to do. Remember that when they were boycotting it and you know, what was his name? Something Johnson.
Woody Johnson.
Hootie Johnson. I think he said Woody
Johnson.
Yeah, Hootie Johnson was like, yeah, fine, don't broadcast it. CBS was like, oh, no, we'll broadcast it. And now they have to do a limited commercial interruption. They even got screwed on the amount of commercials they were allowed. It was very interesting. Yep. I'm looking forward to it. Golf's always a blast. Can't wait for the Masters to come around. But you know what? Early first week of March, we also have the Players.
I was going to say, the Players will be after this week with Tiger back, the next one will be the Players March, I think March 6th weekend.
Yep. That's the first week. And then we have, you know, March, April, May, June, and July, the five majors, even though the first one's not really a major. It's always known as the fifth major. And then we start the FedEx Cup in August.
And late March is match play.
Yep.
That's always a fun little tournament to watch.
Absolutely.
Too.
There's always someone you don't expect that makes a little run into the semis. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. For me, horse racing. What was that?
A little Whitney action.
Whitney. Whitney was interesting. It was actually the Withers. The Whitney's in the summer.
Withers, I mean.
This was an interesting one. 6-5 hit show, 8-5 Arctic Arrogance with the two horses. Fast Fractions, Arctic Arrogance is the horse that gets out in the front. Hit show, you know, there was the pace was pressed. Hit show came flying in, won the race, picked up the points, you know, big win for hit show. That horse is going to be a horse that definitely has to be reckoned with. Sam F. Davis, Litigate was the winner. It was a 5-2 shot. Again, it's another grade three, so not talking about anything ridiculously special, but you know, it's still another horse that gets some Derby points. And in the El Camino over at Golden Gate, Chase the Chaos beat the favorite Gilmore. Chase the Chaos came from off the pace of 4-1. You know, this week you have the Risen Star, which is actually a grade two. It's like a little bit of a different type of race. 14 horses are entered in this race. Right now, the lukewarm favorite is Victory Formation with Pratt and Cox breaking from the 13 post. So we'll see what happens in that. But the Risen Star is usually one of those races where horses can come out of it. Epicenter was the winner last year and was definitely a horse in consideration in the Triple Crown. And that's pretty much what I got. G, anything else?
No, I'm good.
Yep.
Nope, nothing else for me.
All right. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Gino and Kevin talking about the world of sports best that we possibly can. Please follow us wherever we post on social media. Please download the podcast anywhere you can get your podcast, whether it be TuneIn, you know, Apple products, Spotify, wherever. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you don't like. Give us feedback. That's all we really want. We enjoy doing the show. We hope you enjoy listening. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
This has been the Sports Kings from Queens.